Hi and welcome to Footlock. Today coming to you from the end of a long day here at Castle Coombe, and I'm joined by my Footlock friend, Mr. Henry Catchpole.
Hello, Footlock friend, Drew Stern.
Yes, we'll get better at that in future, I do promise.
We'll make it more like, more natural and sort of like, you know, actually sort of...
Yeah, less forced? Is that
yeah,
what you're going
for? Yeah, I think so, less forced, yes.
Fair.
Yeah, less awkward, yeah.
Right, well, that's helping. Let's work on that next time.
Anyway, how are we going to work on it? Are we going to go out for beers or something?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, good.
But that comes later. For starters, we've had an amazing day out here. We have another one tomorrow. We have a lot of footage to show you about what we've been shooting. But I think best to tell everyone about what we've been doing is we jump back in time and into this car and head out on track. Mm-hmm. So, we're back at Castle Coombe.
We are.
The unofficial, official track home of Car Fiction shoots since 2012. It's good to be back.
Nice, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not the most glamorous track in the world, but any track that you know well and you can exploit to its fullest extent always feels a welcome place to take a car out.
Yeah. I wouldn't say Castle Coombe is a tricky track because it's so fast. I still don't feel like I know it that well, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of a glamorous track. What would be a glamorous track? Because when some of them look quite good on television, but
Yes, tracks are inherently grungy. I mean, anyone who's ever been to a track and had to use the facilities there will kind of attest to the fact that they aren't necessarily, while you're there, the most glamorous. But somewhere like Anglesey, I think, looks fantastic.
Yeah,
it's got the epicness of that view out over sea. Or somewhere with heritage like Silverstone, you know, like a track with some history, some character, something about it. Castle Coombe, not many people are probably familiar with Castle Coombe. If you're a big motorsports fan, you've probably swung around here to watch drifting or all manner of motorsport events that they have, but more likely if you come here on any given day you might see people like us driving a car like this.
Civic Type and Rally Day, Castle Coombe Rally Day as well.
Castle Coombe Rally Day, yeah. But we're here now in the Civic Type R, which is going to be the next long-termer that we have. So likely any Castle Coombe shoots that we have coming up, we're going to have a chance to exploit this car on this track.
Yeah.
So you've done a blast now. Quickly, what's your impression of the combination of this car, this track?
it's very good. This is the first time I've driven this Civic Type R on track, this generation. I mean, it's very good, actually. Really, really good. It's quite slippery out here this morning.
Yeah.
But it's pretty easy to manage.
I've got a feeling they may have resurfaced some of this. It feels a bit newer than normal, but we're going to spend a lot of time with this car and you'll get a chance to give a full opinion about it.
Absolutely.
But the real reason we're here is not just to have some fun out here, but we've got one of our large scale epic shoots going on.
We have.
We're just passing them now.
Yeah.
In fact, as we snake past Quarry Corner, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I need one hand. It's good.
On the off. 5 BMWs. So, talk us through what we're filming today.
We are filming what I think must be the ultimate M3 test, because we have got the pinnacle of every generation of M3 out there. So it starts with the E30 M3, of course. But we've got the Sport Evo,
yep,
which was the last of the line, the one with the 2.5 litre engine in it, the bigger 2.5 litre engine. Then the E36, so the ultimate generation of that, was the GT, of which then you produced 356, again done for homologation purposes. Next up, E46 CSL, which most people are very aware of, wonderful sound.
Mm.
Then we've got the E92 GTS, the orange one, very rare car indeed, of course, V8. And then finally we've brought along one from BMW Press Garage, because all the others are actually owned by one very generous owner. We've got the FAT M3 CS, which obviously now it's probably the most controversial one to have in the test, because of course there's the M4
GTS, the fragmentation,
which is but that's an M4, it's not an M3, so that's why, and we haven't done anything on the M3 CS either, so I thought it would be nice to keep that. Keep the
consistency.
Absolutely.
It brings up an interesting point, really, about whether is the new M3 a true continuation of the M3s, or is should we consider the M4 to be that continuation in spirit, or is it just divergent? Is it just two parts of the same experience? Which is it?
It's of course the M4 is really that's the one that's I suppose the.
Well, that's the one that's got the GTS versions, that's the one that's got that.
Exactly, it's a coupe
version.
It's a two-door. Yeah. So, which all the others are two doors. I mean, there was the M3 CRT, which was the four-door version of the GTS, which is actually even rarer than the E92 GTS. But yeah, it's nice to keep it all M3, isn't it, I think?
Had BMW had the M3, M4 naming convention from the very outset, those would all be M4s.
They would, yes.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we're keeping the M3 name consistent. So, I mean, the cars speak for themselves in terms of the performance and their aptitude as cars, but what is it about the M3 in particular that you think captured people's imaginations and became such an aspirational car? For each generation that came through, what about them really hammered home for people, do you think?
I think it was, well, obviously the 3 Series was a car, it sat at that right point in the range whereby it was accessible to more people. Mm. You know, it's a car that people could dream of owning one day. You know, it wasn't ridiculously expensive. And I think it's sort of, obviously it's got the motorsport pedigree as well. I mean, the wonderful images of whether you like touring cars or rallying. The Roberto Ravaglia, all the touring car championships, World Touring Car Championship, European, German. Just fantastic. And they looked so right as well, those E30s. Or Patrick Schneier's on the Manx. That's an amazing video of that Bastos liveried ProDrive M3. They're just fantastic looking things, and I think it was the E30 generation that really set it all up, and then in a way everything's kind of sort of fed off it after that, because the E36 wasn't really that well received, certainly in the motoring press at the time, but people then wanted the E46 to recapture something of the E30, CSL sounds wonderful, and it's just, but it has always, I think, built from that E30.
Now, in terms of the M cars, not just seeing it as the 3 Series, but you can arguably trace the M cars back to the M1, BMW supercar of the 70s. But would you think it would be fair to say that it's the M3 that really helped establish M cars for BMW?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly the glamour of the M1. Put people sort of in mind of this M brand. It's always quite nice starting with a supercar, isn't it? But then to bring that down to a level where people can potentially afford one. It's an expensive car at the time, the E30 M3. As an M3 is an expensive car these days, but it's, like I say, it just seems that sort of within reach, doesn't it? Mm. And then I suppose the M5 being a very different sort of M car, but equally always people like the idea of these big fast saloons, don't they? So although they didn't at the time, the first M5 wasn't well received. No, it was because it was really expensive, and I remember looking, I was quite shocked, I looked back at the original reports and everyone went, well, really, is it sort of kind of, you know, it's very expensive and it's not really that sort of, it's a bit of a sleeper, it doesn't even look as good as the because it was the M535, whatever it was before, that had the styling kit on it. That sort of, you know, in many ways looked better. So it was, the M5 wasn't that well received at the time. These days, it's arguably the M2's actually taken over.
This is it. Like, you look at the size of the M2 compared to the E30, and they seem far more comparable as a package. In the same way that maybe we run things like the Up GTI, maybe having more in common with the Golf GTI, original Golf GTI.
Yes. So, well, I've been in an M2 competition for the last couple of weeks because we've been doing a film on that, which will be coming to the channel at some point.
Yeah.
And it was interesting jumping straight out of that into the F80 M3 CS and feeling just how much of a bigger car that M3 really does feel. It's extraordinary. And it's not, you look at the dimensions and yes, the M2 is probably closer to the E46 M3, I'd say, in sort of footprint. They don't look like massive margins. It's mainly sort of the wheelbase is probably the biggest thing, I think, in terms of just how it makes it feel that much smaller and more wieldy. But it is, it's quite a bit shorter. It's not that much narrower, though. It's not massive margins, but it definitely feels like the more compact car. The M3 does feel like a big car now.
Well, I think, and that's what's interesting, that although the M3 may have evolved, the desire for that kind of package remains, and that's why the M2 is as popular as it is, perhaps. But we'll cover all of this and more in not just one video, but an entire series of videos on the M3 covering this wonderful selection of cars that we're about to drive past yet again out here on circuit. It's going to be well worth your time. Make sure that you have hit the notification icon on the channel to make sure that you do not miss a single one. I guarantee it will be worth it.
Hopefully, anyway, providing I actually remember what I've got to say. I'm immersed in M3 history. I just feel like I'm oozing M3 history from every pore. I've just got to get it out there on camera now.
Is that what that is?
Possibly.
Okay.
I don't think there's any sort of pill or cream that's going to help it.
But what's also interesting is not just what we're doing or what content we're filming, it's how we do it. And we're privileged enough to be able to put together these collections of cars through that helpful collaboration from manufacturers and private owners alike. But it's making it all work in one sweet, simultaneously effortless and hard-working unit that makes the kind of videos that you like to watch. So we have to take you through what it takes to make the kind of films that we do here. We've come out to circuit with 6 cars that we're shooting, another 2 or 3 cars just to transport people, a car transporter. We've got 4 video producers. We have a production assistant, and I and Henry, and I'm around as well. Henry plays his part. He turns up. He says some words. It's brilliant. But it's worth noting how hard the crew have to work. We talk about the shoots that we do on Footlock all the time, but it's hard to know exactly how much technical specificity you'd like us to go into. So if there's anything in particular you want us to highlight, let us know in the comments. But for me, what's most interesting about these shoots is how kind of seamless we've made them all work. It's, we're a small web-based video operation, and we work well. I think honestly we punch above our weight, I think, in terms of the content that we make. The benefit that we have is that we're fast moving
sometimes. Yeah. Once we've had coffee,
once Henry's had his coffee, he moves incredibly quick, and we have dedicated people. In fact, back here getting increasingly car sick is Matt Murray. Hi Matt. He's are you feeling car sick?
Nice and leisurely.
Nice and leisurely. I'm not entirely sure how well it's coming across, but Henry's probably at, I don't know, 7th or 8th tenths going around this circuit while we're talking, which is that's about accurate?
Yeah, 7.
7? He's got more in the tank, but I'm bracing myself in the side to try and make sure I don't flail about like a rag doll. That is experience for you. Can I see that? That there was a pretty quick corner, and I didn't fly around like some kind of child's toy, which is, I think, quite impressive. So that, yes, indeed, that's what we've been doing today and we'll be doing tomorrow in this weird time mix-up that we call video editing. But the channel's had lots of stuff coming through of it recently, namely a couple of films with you in it that I wanted to touch on really briefly. For starters, something quite personal, we had a look at your Escort.
Yes.
That's a car, not a person, by the way. Just for clarification.
This is a car channel. I'm sure everybody, when they say Escort, immediately thought of a Mark II or Mark I going sideways in a forest.
Well,
I know I do.
Well, so what will, for anyone who hasn't watched that film, if they were able to click on it.
Like the best thing the channel's ever had, isn't it?
Well, I can't disagree with that, but what would people be able to expect if they had a look?
They would be able to expect, just it's me talking around my 1979 Mark II Escort rally car, which I've had for, I don't know, 8-9 years now, something like that. And it hasn't done much rallying, largely through a lack of funds, basically, and gumption on my part. I'm sure if I wasn't doing this job every day and playing with cars all the time, perhaps I would have got it out.
If you weren't driving so many cars, you'd be able to drive more cars.
Exactly, something like that. But yeah, I love it. So it's a bit of a look around that and see if people are interested, which apparently people are, because they've got lots of thumbs up. So thank you very much. I'm glad you're interested. And it's coming on a pace. I've got two new fuel pumps since we did that. So, wow, I know, lovely, beautiful facet fuel pump. So it's that's all good, and hopefully you might get it out in the next week or so.
Really? You're actually going to take it out and rally it?
Not rally it, no. We just need to go and shake it down, so we'll probably go to Bill Green Rally School or something like that and just put it through its paces, see what's wrong, what needs doing, carbs needs setting up and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think, could be good.
One thing that you didn't touch on in the film that I'm quite interested about is how did it come into your possession in the first place? How did you find it?
I'd been looking to buy a house for a long time. I'd lived in all sorts of hovels, basically, and saved up lots of money for a deposit on a house. Basically, yes. And then there was the recession and all that, and the house market was rubbish. So I had this deposit, and eventually I cracked, and I'd been looking for a Mark II for a while, and then somebody emailed me and said, oh, how about this one? It's kind of possibly what you want. And it was somebody was using it as a road car for sort of Tour of the Lakes and that sort of thing. And so it was sort of too much for anyone that wanted a road car Escort, but it wasn't quite enough for anyone that wanted to go straight in for a rally car, so it's perfect. It was a bit of a project, and but it had pretty much most of the right bits on it and stuff like that. So yeah, that's how it came into my possession. I think I paid, I think it was 10 or 11, I think it was £11,000 for it.
And what
probably
would,
10 and a half.
And is it something you're making money on, or is it like a bit of a sinkhole of cash?
I never look, because... Right. There are lots of sort of RS1800 replicas, which I thought I was going to do originally, and they, for a while, they were commanding big money, and then it sort of dropped back down again. I don't think I've lost money on it, let's put it that way. I have spent more than I would have liked, probably, but I just don't look at it, because I don't want to get rid of it. It doesn't owe me anything, and therefore, I don't want to driving through a forest thinking, oh, is this worth this much? Oh, it's worth that much.
It kind of defeats the point. Yeah.
It's just not what I've got the car for. So, yeah, it wasn't bought as an investment. And until I absolutely, definitely need to sell it, I'm not getting rid of it. So I think it doesn't matter at that point.
I think people are always glad to hear when cars aren't bought as investments, because it's kind of contrary to everything that kind of car fiction stands for. It's like cars are there to be driven.
Absolutely.
We've done films on cars that Alex has, and now we've got interest from other people on the Cover Action team who also want to talk about the cars that they own.
George,
yes. Charlie, who's over there. So if you are interested, let us know in the comments, and we can definitely make time to do features on those cars and maybe some more on Henry's car.
My Clio as well. We'll do something on that as well.
And Henry's
Clio. People seem interested in that, apparently.
Yeah, everyone else on the team owns really nice cars. I don't. There you go. I just drive them.
Well, sort it out then. I've got
too many kids. new cars. You got to drive the Stelvio Quadrifoglio.
Quadrifoglio.
Mm-hmm. You don't pronounce the G. Yeah. There's a film up on the channel. It was a quick in and out in Scotland, wasn't it?
It was, so to speak. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. We flew up early that morning from Heathrow to Glasgow. Picked the car up there and went up the Duke's Pass, which was very lovely this time of year, and it didn't rain, which was, well, not all the time, a little bit. George is scowling at me there. All right, it didn't rain that much. It was quite damp.
You were in a car. He was outside the car.
No, I had to stand outside the car as well. Obviously, fast around it. There's statics and stills. It's kind of.
That's why you hide in the boot.
Yeah, is it?
Dry boot.
Hmm. Yeah, then he drives off and turns his hijack. That's going back to the conversation. Anyway, yes, it was. If you like small SUVs, it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
You know, Porsche Macan, I didn't mention this in the film, but the Porsche Macan is less expensive than that, which puts it in some sort of perspective, because do you want a Porsche or do you want an Alfa? It's quite a sort of...
Yeah.
But it is good fun to drive, and it sounds fantastic. I mean, it's that power plant, they've done such a good job. I know it had input from Ferrari, the guys that did the... turbocharging on the Ferraris and most of the California most recently. Well, that was 488 GTB, but California initially, that guy came over, did that engine, and it's fabulous. So yeah, it's a cool thing. If you like small SUVs.
Mm. Well, I drove the Stelvio when it originally came out. I was meant to drive it on the Stelvio Pass, but Alfa took us out there while the Stelvio Pass was still closed.
See what they did there? It's a bit like, you know, the press office going back to Ibiza for the launch of, the Ibiza.
Yeah. Say I have a good time of that when they get to go to Spain very often. But I love that car. What I found out recently when I was on the Rolls-Royce Cullinan launch was that the lead engineer for that project...
Good segue.
Started...
Slip that in.
Yeah, started on... Stelvio, well, started the Stelvio project. She didn't start there. She'd already been in the industry for quite some time. It wasn't a project she got to see all the way through because she got poached by Rolls-Royce to go and work on the Cullinan, which is also a video that we have up on the channel, which you can enjoy. But so I think that there's a, not necessarily a similarity in the handling, but there's an original thought there behind making it a well-handling SUV that has been kind of shared across that. And I guess it's important when the whole world is turning to SUVs that there is work being done to make them more drivable, make them actually cars that work on the road and handle well. And according to you, the Quadrifoglio does a good job of making it sporty as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, still on the spirit of SUVs, but on the topic of long-termers, it was a sad day, but we had to say goodbye to the Discovery Sport. And well, if you had to sum up, we still have a film coming out on the car to really send it off in style, but really if you had to sum it up in just a few sentences, the time that we spent with the car, it's been quite a while, like most of this year we've spent with it, and you've done more miles than anyone else in it. What is your like overriding feeling of the car?
I enjoyed it much more than I thought I was going to. And I say that because I've, you know, long terms I've run in the past have always been very sporty. I know this has sport in its name, but let's face it, it's sort of, and I know it's the sportiest one. So I was a bit sort of, you know, I know it would be a very good support car for us on shoots and things like that. But I really enjoyed having that car in my life much more than I thought I would. And I explain a bit more about that in the final film that we've done. So, I did enjoy it, and it was a fantastic long distance car as well. Sort of kind of stealth. It doesn't shout about that, and you don't get into it. And it's sort of, I said this before, it's not a luxury car, it's not a Cullinan. You get in and think, oh, I want to spend hours here. It's sort of, you know, you've pretty much got an Inglewood fireplace and your favourite armchair. It's not like that, but you can pass hours and hours and hours driving it and suddenly think, oh, hang on a minute, I should probably stop now. And it's not one of those cars that makes you think, oh, I need to stop.
So, which is perfect for what we do, which is a lot of mileage in the cars. If you have any specific questions about what it's like to live with a Discovery Sport over a longer period of time, on YouTube you can leave it in the comments below, or find us on Twitter at Carfection, or on Instagram at Carfection Films, or on Facebook and ask us a question. But I guess it's time to announce what the next Carfection long-termer is.
Didn't we do that when we go around the track?
No, because that's a separate feature.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Okay. Well, the clue is what we're actually sitting on. It is the Civic Type R, Honda's finest hot hatchery. That's weird. Don't do that. It is a wing. We found that when you drive with that open, the wing forces the boot lid down. Oh, all the joys that we're going to find out as we use this as a long-term. We have got a fix for that, and you'll see that in some behind-the-scenes footage coming very, very soon. But equally, if you have questions that we should answer over the next couple of months with this amazing piece of Japanese
Honda-ness.
Honda-ness. I like hot hatchery as a phrase. Hot hatchery.
Reminds me of Aldous Huxley in Brave New World. Hatcheries.
Hatcheries. Indeed. Then please also find us on the social networks and in the comments on YouTube, and leave us a question of things that you want us to find out about this car. It's been crazy out on track, and we've got a whole other day ahead of us. So it's got a time for us to wrap up on a shorter than usual episode of Footlock. Thank you so much for being part of the Footlock family and watching all the way to the end. Don't forget to have hit the notification icon to make sure you're notified when our next show comes out.
They're a good bunch out there.
You are our best fans.
We've
by
asked
now.
Them and, you know,
and there is an extended version of this audio only version as a podcast, which you can find wherever you find your podcasts. Look for Carfection : For the Love of Cars, and you will find it, and it will be downloaded automatically to whatever device you listen on. It's probably your phone.
Probably, isn't it? Yeah.
It's phones. Anyway, thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you. Yes, download it to your Walkman. Goodbye.